Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for joining me as we pick up again on our weekly appointment with the Vatican Centuries, a 38-part series written and presented by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett. In the last episode, we reached the 14th century, hearing how two women put pressure on Pope Gregory XI to return to Rome, how the Vatican became a papal residence, and how the Great Schism began. Today we'll be following up on that Great Schism, hearing how the Council of Constance put an end to it. We also hear of jubilees and pilgrims, how the Romans sacked the Vatican, and how Catherine of Siena, a luminous figure, appears on the scene. Stay tuned.
Chapter 23, The Great Schism.
As the 14th century drew to a close, the disintegration of the medieval world continued on its inexorable course.
But the Renaissance wind was already blowing. As the enthusiasm for classical studies increased, the town of Florence emerged as the cradle of the new culture.
There could be found Donatello, father of modern sculpture, his friend Brunelleschi, who inaugurated the classic movement in architecture and designed the dome of the cathedral, and Lorenzo Ghiberti, working on the bronze doors of the baptistry, called later by Michelangelo the Gates of Paradise.
The Netherlands School of Music dominated the musical life of Europe, while from Flanders came the news that two brothers named Van Eyck had discovered a new process of painting using linseed oil.
With the birth of Henry the Navigator, the first oceanographer, a whole new era of naval exploration opened up. But it was also a time which saw the invention of gunpowder, and at the turn of the century, the passing of an act which made it legal to burn heretics.
The last decades of the old century and the first of the new, however, were marked by the gravest constitutional crisis to be experienced by the medieval church, the Great Schism of the West.
After the long absence of the popes in Avignon, the Romans had welcomed in 1377 the return of Gregory XI. But he died not long after, and under pressure from the local populace, the conclave elected the Italian Urban VI.
He came into immediate conflict with the College of Cardinals. In recent decades, the power of the cardinals had increased considerably, and when Urban tried to use the plenitude of papal power, he met with opposition.
The French group, which was the largest, retired to Anagni, south of Rome, from where they issued a declaration that Urban's election had been illegal because it had taken place under pressure.
Urban declared himself willing to submit the validity of his election to the judgment of a council. But the rebel cardinals refused, said that Urban was a usurper and should be excommunicated. This was equivalent to a declaration of schism. The mutinous cardinals elected a rival pope, and soon the whole of Christian Europe was divided into two camps.
The schism lasted close on 40 years, during which time popes and anti-popes were elected, the former residing in Rome, the latter in Avignon. But after the death of the first anti-pope, Clement VII, the universities began to examine the canonical situation of the contending popes and studied how to end the schism.
Meanwhile, in Rome, life went on. Another jubilee came and went in 1400, when the number of pilgrims was counted as 120,000. On this occasion, a dramatic procession of 30,000 flagellants crying peace and mercy crossed the city. The people called them the Battuti Bianchi, as they wore white cloaks and cowls with a red cross on their heads. Singing hymns and beating themselves, they excited the people to a state of fanaticism, provoking all kinds of excesses.
Rome was in a constant state of uproar. Innocent VII, who was weak and old, was unable to control the city. Once, when Innocent was receiving a delegation of citizens, they began to insult him and accused him of doing nothing to end the schism. Present at the meeting was a nephew of the Pope's, who had been growing more and more irritated at the treatment his uncle received. This time, he acted. He waited for the delegation to come out, waylaid them as they left the Vatican, and promptly had 11 of the members killed and the bodies thrown out onto the streets.
The people went wild. They sounded the alarm, set fire to the cardinal's palaces, sacked the churches, beat up anyone who offered resistance. That same night, the Pope and his nephew, escorted by horsemen, left the city secretly. When the Romans discovered it, they stormed the Vatican, broke up everything they could lay their hands on, stealing even the relics of the saints. Many important documents in the archives were destroyed, while all over the city, the papal coat of arms was obliterated.
At first, the Colonna princes had attempted to lead the popular movement, but now it was clear the people wanted no leaders. The princes called in the King of Naples to help. He was a foreigner, and the Romans were even less willing to accept him as master than the Pope. They barricaded the streets and fought desperately, while sending a message to Innocent at Viterbo to come and take command of the city.
Public opinion had veered in the Pope's favour, and it was realised that he had not been a party to his nephew's crime. The King of Naples was defeated, and the keys of the city presented to the Pope.
Since the very beginning of the schism, the idea of calling a council to resolve the situation had been under consideration. But it was only when this was proposed by Paris University, called the third power of Europe, after the papacy and the empire, that the suggestion was taken seriously.
In 1409, a first council was called at Pisa by the cardinals of the two obediences. The rival popes were called on to attend and then abdicate. As neither appeared, they were both deposed and a third pope elected. But the other two popes refused to resign, so the schism was triple.
Finally, at the Council of Constance, convened in 1414, through the influence of Sigismund, the Holy Roman Emperor, the question was resolved, and the schism healed. Gregory XII, the Roman Pope, resigned. Benedict XIII, the Avignon Pope, refused, but was abandoned by all but a few followers. And the third, John XXIII, fled from the council and was deposed.
In 1417, Otto Colonna, a Roman cardinal deacon, was elected pope and took the name of Martin V. His pontificate marked the end of the schism and the beginning of the restoration of the ecclesiastical and temporal power of the papacy.
You were listening there to episode 23 of The Vatican Centuries, a programme written and presented by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett. Next week we'll be hearing about changes and renewal, how the papal government reorganised, how nuncios were introduced and the Secretariat of State established. And finally, we'll hear all about conclave intrigues recorded by Pope Pius II. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.